sufrir y seguir de modo cruel contra el pueblo conspirando para seguirlo explotando. Y en eso llegó Fidel. Se acabó la diversión, llegó el comandante y mandó a parar. Se acabó la diversión, llegó el comandante y mandó a parar.
El presidente cubano Miguel Díaz-Canel cumple el viernes su primer año de gestión al frente del gobierno de la isla caribeña, marcado por aciertos y dificultades.
Hace exactamente un año, esta imagen selló la histórica transición generacional del gobierno en Cuba. 12 meses después de su elección, el presidente Miguel Díaz-Canel ha establecido un nuevo estilo de gobierno en medio de una situación económica compleja debido a las sanciones más severas de los Estados Unidos, restricciones financieras y la crisis actual en Venezuela, el principal aliado de la nación caribeña.
Díaz-Canel asumió la revolución que le elevó, ¿no? Fidel a todos nosotros. Yo pienso que él, imagínate, está trabajando según sus posibilidades, según los recursos que tenemos. Sabemos que somos un país bloqueado y yo pienso que por lo menos se ha visto trabajando positivamente en varios sectores.
Ahora creo que va en buen camino, ha querido con todas sus cosas poco a poco y ha querido mejorar el país. Ha querido sustituir exportaciones por las importaciones mismas de nosotros, ha querido realzar esto de poco a poco y ha sido un año bastante difícil, pero bueno, hasta ahora desde mi punto de vista como joven creo que va por buen camino.
Realmente lo considero exitoso, porque ha seguido la línea del comandante y de la revolución como tal.
Para este analista cubano, el mandatario ha enfrentado un año complejo debido al difícil contexto económico doméstico y el adverso panorama internacional marcado por la agresividad de Washington contra la isla. No obstante, el jefe de Estado ha liderado el país con varios aciertos.
En el plano político, los cambios han sido muchos. Hay una nueva constitución, hay una apertura del espacio público con la apertura de internet, en los datos móviles, con la insistencia del presidente en utilizar los mecanismos electrónicos para la gobernanza. Es decir, tenemos el país ha continuado cambiando y esos cambios han ido en la dirección, aunque quizás no suficientemente, pero en la dirección que ha cambiado la sociedad cubana.
Incrementar la eficiencia económica ha sido su prioridad en medio de un escenario tenso en que los envíos de petróleo desde Caracas han disminuido sustancialmente y las exportaciones no han alcanzado sus ingresos proyectados.
Los problemas están básicamente en que no se ha logrado articular todo lo que implica la reforma económica, todo lo que implica la actualización del modelo económico cubano. Eso todavía está pendiente y no ha avanzado con la celeridad que debió avanzar.
Potenciar sectores claves como el turismo, la biotecnología, energías renovables, infraestructura y servicios médicos son las prioridades económicas del gobierno de Miguel Díaz-Canel en los próximos años. Raimundo Urrechaga, Hispan TV.
Y concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de RTN, de Telesur, de Radio de Naciones Unidas, del Informativo Farco, de Hispan TV y del diario La Jornada. A nombre de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
What's up, y'all? This is Grouch, your favorite simple man from the Living Legends crew. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101 FM. Keep it.
And next up on Free Radio, it's Bathroom Spears Broadsides, the Thursday, April 9th, 2019 edition. I got 2 hours coming at you of a lot of interviews, much of them connected with the human debris left behind, the wreckage in human lives, or dislocation. Let's not be too theatrical, I guess. People are struggling to address it as best they can, but having to lose 9/10 of your property, no place to go, now facing police harassment for a population that's already vulnerable, being lied to by the city in a city that sort of facilitates a anti-homeless narrative that characterizes homeless people as skunks, punks, and drunks, as one ancient anti-homeless speaker used to put it, or addicts, alcoholics, and crazies, or bums. It's difficult kind of to get past these labels. Simply dodge the police and get a place to sleep, even as the weather turns wet again, as it was today in Santa Cruz. Following up on a lot of that, it's hard to say intended consequences, because the city will probably tell you and believe, the city authorities and workers like Susie O'Hara and Tina Scholl, assistant city managers, who orchestrated the closure of the Ross camp, even though they had no alternate shelter, and then lied about it, misrepresenting what they had to the courts and to the public, and believe that they're telling the truth. Often politicians, in order to be more credible, do persuade themselves of these things. And these people, of course, are the consummate politicians, the real politicians. They don't have to run for office. They're in office forever. They're appointed until such time as we get the city council to actually fire the city manager and hire someone else, assuming they want to keep the current city's structure of government the way it is, which, of course, is probably a big mistake. But let's get into it. Here it is. The show.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
Let's begin for new listeners, and there may be some of those, I don't know. My apologies to those who already know the sad, sad story, or the enraging story of the demolition of the Ross camp and the lies the city told in order to get rid of homeless people there and to present a nice front to both the community and the courts. Beth McHenry on the Bruce Bratton KZSC Wednesday show talking about it. We kind of join him in mid-broadcast. I had a little trouble tuning in, and, I got what I got. It was May 7th, a Tuesday show. I think Bruce has several regular shows on KZSC. He's an old codger. Me too. I'm also an old codger. A bunch of old codgers around. Who has always seemed to be, he kind of gives you the latest scuttlebutt on art and music. Movies particularly, I guess, rather than art and music. But also follows city council from the sort of mainstream liberal progressive perspective. He's never done too much had too much interest in homeless civil rights. But that's kind of been a side issue for progressives who give it lip service but don't really do much about it, particularly if it threatens their electoral victories. That's been the procedure in the past, though it's changed in the last decade or so because the prevalence of homeless people all over the place has become so obvious, and the income inequality and rental profiteering that's driving away traditional people and destroying them, even the liberal progressive base, even with the university's assist in electoral voting, is becoming tangible. So here's Bruce's Keith on Bruce.
I'm Bruce Bratton, and we'll be back in just a minute with Keith McHenry. But right now, let me tell you, the Miriam Ellis International Pep Days, we cleaned up a lot of stuff, but we got no cooperation from the city. So when the original agreement between the camp council and the city was made, where the city was to come in with some... staff that would help lift some of the heavy materials out that no one needed anymore, that they had brought there in part as part of their shelter during the heavy rains of this winter, the city failed to show up. And they did not bring dumpsters. We had to do it all, much of it ourselves. Fortunately, the city did come with a truck eventually and took away a lot of the debris that we had stacked up outside the camp. But that was, we had this mediation with the city. We spent 2 days basically in federal court, and we offered a number of solutions that the city could have adopted, as did Drew Glover, which attempted to provide solutions in city council, but was blocked by Mayor Wilkins and by the city manager and by Susie O'Hare, and by, you know, they just continually put roadblocks from the beginning of the year.
What's the justification for the roadblocks?
They don't seem to they claim that they have enough place for everybody. Oh. But if you go downtown, you'll see people living all around downtown. Mm-hmm. So they actually know.
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, or the stream of Free Radio, I should say, as we continue to hope that sometime in the distant future we'll actually be back on the air, transmitting and not just streaming, it's Bathrop's Piers Broadsides, the May 16th, 2019 edition. I'll be running through a number of things. There have been some pretty tumultuous moments in the last week. We had a Monday visit to the River Street 1220 campground, which to demand that people have access to folks who are in there if the folks in there want visitors, and also looking to see that folks in there be allowed to come and go without having to go into a particular shuttle service if they need to do so or want to do so. Particularly important for people who are engaged in this lawsuit. And also we had the lawsuit against the city for its destruction of the Ross camp with no adequate alternate facilities. For the 61 people at the River Street campground at 1220 River, it may indeed be better, but that's, of course, a tiny fraction of the 1,000 to 2,000 people in the city who are still outside and the hundreds of people who are at the Ross camp before it was unceremoniously mowed down. And there's also the upcoming, or shall we say, it came and went, city council meeting that we had, or they had, I should say, and that some of us attended, where we were twice locked out of the chambers by Mayor Watkins because essentially she refused to grant an extra 15 minutes. Councilmember Cummings, now Vice Mayor, sedulously trailed on behind, saying she is the mayor and whatever she says goes and that sort of thing. Well, I don't know if it's exactly what he was saying, but it sounded a bit like this subservience to authority that I find sad. And then finally there was a meeting yesterday last night, Wednesday the 15th, of the Santa Cruz neighbors who were grilling the same Vice Mayor Cummings, who is responding a lot to questions about homeless folks. And I think the anti-homeless hostility in the crowd was kind of damped down, though some of it was definitely there. I experienced it a little bit personally. And it was very tightly controlled by an anti-homeless moderator, whose name I don't want to foul up, but
you'll be able to hear some of her, well, not just her moderation, but the interchange between Justin Cummings and the audience, either today on this broadcast or on Sunday when we do a longer version of the show.
Sing me of wars and sing me of bread lines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Dress your observation in syncopation. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you.
Was an abbreviated version of our theme song, Sing Me a Song with Social Significance, stolen from Pins and Needles, and it was then stolen from them, where I first heard it, not on the stage of that production from the 30s, but from the radio station KPFA in the 60s, when I would hear it at home. I'm going to begin the show outside the Ross Camp, outside the River Street Camp. I guess I'm nostalgic for the Ross Camp. On Monday morning, when we announced a press conference protest and attempt to get some to restore some civil rights to homeless people in the community generally, but specifically to those who want to support people in the River Camp or those who are in the River Camp, who on whose behalf we are not specifically authorized to act. That has to be said very clearly. Nobody asked us to specifically to come down and do that, although some individuals may have indicated they supported that. This is our belief that people should have access to visitors if they want them, that people should be allowed to come and go if they want to, and that people should not be behind barbed wire if that's at all possible, unless there's, they're keeping out wolves and other predators. But the predators themselves should not have put up the barbed wire and pretend to be the guardians of the hen house. Here am I narrating what went down, and you'll be able to hear some of that.
So it's around 10 to 11 out here on May 13th at the River Campground. We have a collection of folks who have arrived. Alicia from Salinas, Wes and Dredd. We have our religious support from Phil Posner and his boss, the local dog.
And Wes and Dredd, of course, are video journalists who actually have posted a video online of much of the event that happened at the River Street Camp. And you can find that on YouTube under the heading Cruel and Inhumane. The people from Ross Camp have been dispersed throughout Santa Cruz. So under Cruel and Inhumane, looks like it can be done. And it's a 43-minute long video. Mine goes on for longer. We're only going to play a part of mine. You can actually see this online, and mine is the audio, of course. And this one that you can see online is the video, and gives you a sense of what the Ross Camp, at least the outside of the Ross Camp, looks like. It has a red picket fence. It's along Highway 9, right on the edge of Santa Cruz as you head toward Felton. There's a large storage container in front of the red fence. The red fence is topped by barbed wire and in some places by razor wire. And inside there are about 60 small one-man green tents, most of which have only one person in them, because it was made very clear by Eric, the director, they will not force people, and this is very humane and appropriate, into having somebody squeeze into their tent if they don't want to. But a couple people have done that, apparently, here.
And there's a couple of children here, too. Gloria is sitting in the Huffmobile, and inside, the gates are open to let in a vehicle that's just arriving. There are some folks who are at the little white kind of, I guess it's a community pavilion inside. A lone chair sitting in front of the red gate.
And the lone chair, I think, is for the security guard who maintained a stolid I would say policeman-like performance, but not all policemen are as uncommunicative as this fellow was. But the idea here is to have a, supposedly to protect the people inside the camp, but actually in the past, the city was more candid in saying that they had a mobile police station nearby last year when this camp was also open, security guards on the outside from First Alarm, and then internal monitors to make sure that these renegade, crazy homeless people didn't, I don't know, escape from the encampment and run wild in the city. I don't think that actually is what they were afraid of, but the idea of pandering to the fears and paranoia of either what they imagined to be or perhaps heard from as apprehensions by neighbors strikes me as succumbing to the worst sentiments and the most ill-advised sort of regard for homeless people or descriptions of homeless people. Anyway. Here's some more.
The city property authorized entry only. Unauthorized entry is prohibited. And here comes actually the mainstream media. Anthony, Alicia, here comes the mainstream media, so be prepared to deal with their nonsense. What do we got here? We got another one of these. Freedom of movement. Put this in the back here.
And what's happening here is we were setting up some signs. I think I'm going to skip ahead because, well, it's always very thrilling to hear my voice, probably not so much for all you innocent listeners.
All right. It's about time you guys showed up, for heaven's sake.
Jeremiah Hindsley.
Jeremiah, you were a resident of the previous River Street camp.
Yes, sir.
You said it was helpful for you, but then they shut it down. And there's some things you didn't like about that camp that apparently are still happening here.
Well, you know, there were things about the camp. Look, you gotta, it's all there. You take a marginalized group of people, you march them to the edge of somewhere, and you put them in an enclosed area. I mean, you can look in here. There's not one tree, one bush. It looks like Mad Max's, parking garage. I mean, been the shuttling in and out. And I think they're not having visitors as hardcore, but, you know, with such a new thing happening and such an experimental thing, I mean, I don't know what goes on anywhere else. This is new to me. You know, trying to set a standard, there's no real blueprint for it, and being that the world is kind of watching, right? But at the same time, man, if I wanted to come and go as I please, yeah, but that would make this kind of a flop house, wouldn't it? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't like it, but I didn't think that I put too much thought into it. Because, you know, a lot of the Stanford experiments started happening here. We became more docile in many ways, and they became more militant, you know? And it was staffed by homeless people, you know. And like the Salvation Army, many of the Salvation Armies, or Sallies as they're called, you know, are for homeless people, staffed by homeless people that hate the homeless people. Because the real crime isn't, homelessness ain't the problem, it's the critical mass of homelessness. When you got too many people in one spot, nobody talks about 69 when the hippies crashed the infrastructure of San Francisco, that was a particular generation, you know, and they had... You know, it was just different times. But, you know, I can remember, you know, look, you got rules. It is an internment camp. It is. It's an internment camp. And because, you know, our forefathers called slavery our particular institution. You know, I like to believe that homelessness is our new particular institution, you know, the half percent. Not really fully a person. That's how I feel. But then when you go back and you look at it, and there's science behind this, too, you know, maybe the reason why some of you folks ignore us is because you don't want to be reminded. You know, I don't want to think that I'm 2 paychecks away from being there with you. Or at the same time, maybe it's an allergic reaction, like some people shudder when they see cockroaches and some don't. But then the real crime is that, you know, the more that is put on this in a bad light, because homelessness is the new N-word. Okay? And the more you say that, the more you call me a demographic. I'm not a fucking pie chart. I know that.
Let me interrupt you, Jeremiah, No, you're doing fine. A lot of what you're saying is very important. But I'm noticing that, hey, Phil, are they letting you in? Well, what does he say? Oh, okay, here comes Eric. He's going to tell us he's the director of the River Street.
There are rules to follow, and that front gate is probably one of the most important rules that they have.
The issue, as I mentioned before, for those of us who planned this protest, was access to the campground coming and going for those who live there and for those who want to be supportive of those who live there.
there is security, but at what security, just like in America, what's going on now is it's fast becoming a police state, you're giving up certain freedoms. Okay, so for a shower, for a bathroom, for all kinds of things, and not to mention, just because it's not it hasn't worked out the bugs, if you can ever do that in the system, you know. But there were days, honestly, where we were family, you know, despite all intents and purposes, you know.
We'll leave it there for the moment, Jeremiah, but I'm going to come back to you.
Okay.
Thank you. We've been talking with
Jeremiah Hinesley.
Thanks, Jeremiah.
And I don't know if I actually did come back to Jeremiah. My apologies. I think maybe I did, but there was a lot happening after that.
Well, here is Ground. We have Anthony Prince and some people I don't recognize. The K's SBW News.
Anthony Prince, of course, is the attorney for the California Homeless Union and also essentially the main moving force in the lawsuit against the city on behalf of the Ross Camp refugees or Rough Riders.
Shown up, there's Sea Otter from Food Not Bombs. And over here we have Olga. And what's the name of this dog, Olga?
Volva.
All right.
So Olga and her dog, Volva. Olga was dressed in a nun's outfit, and I think that we had another activist, Nick Whitehead, who came dressed as a sort of a holy friar, had a copy, he borrowed Olga's Bible. The idea was that there was problems with even religious figures getting in to the River Street campground, and there was concern that there was no clear access policy. Although, the week before, after we had spoken with Eric, there was a new set of guidelines issued which did talk about a changed and improved policy. And the real issue still remains, even as we do this broadcast, just whether this policy is actually something real or just something on paper. Whether it's being followed by the staff, whether ordinary people, particularly homeless people, have access to each other through this campground.
And we have Phil who's trying to negotiate his way into the River Street campground. Here comes Captain Harold.
Hi, Harold.
Hey, Harold.
Oh, excuse me. So is it okay if we come in as long as we don't have protest signs?
Everybody wants to be metal detector wanded and bag checked?
Yeah. You have a right to do that.
Okay, now Phil likes to give away a lot of things because he wants to be amenable. That's the fellow who says it's okay if we come in without signs, and you know, you have a right to wand us, and no, I don't think so. But I mean, this might be something that some people would agree to. Others might not agree to be, you know, treated like they're coming into a jail or like they are potential criminals. Pandering to the stereotype about homeless folks. Now, if you're talking about the rationale for this, as for most police state activities in the last few decades, last half century or longer, has been the drug war. You know, the drugs, because drugs are illegal, they become the basis for criminalizing people, and that becomes the basis for locking them up and for denying them access and huge security measures in order to control the flow of drugs, even though this, I think libertarians properly point out, is a matter of individual choice and should have nothing to do with the government. It's a medical condition at most. Nonetheless, it's what's going on here. In any case, let's hear some more.
My viewpoint.
I'll tell you what, I have my leadership here, so give me a minute and let me ask them and see if they're okay with that.
Okay.
You know, like that.
Because the whole idea of the press conference, first of all, I want to suggest to you that if we're inside, it's going to look a lot less confrontational.
I understand that.
Which I think is good for
you. My only issue is I don't want people acting like they're interested in the press conference to simply get inside the camera.
We have a right to our privacy.
Yeah. So, well, that's why. Tell them no protest signs.
Now, the idea that you're going to abandon the First Amendment because you're a troublemaker if you hold a protest sign is... I don't know where Phil gets this idea, but let's continue.
That's my suggestion.
All right, so give me just a minute.
But we're hoping that we can come inside. Okay,
you better talk to your people and see if they want to do that, because they may regard it as a First Amendment right. I mean, I'm not saying I do this. Hi, I'm Robert.
Hi, Robert.
Good to meet you, Robert.
Good to meet
you, Robert. Very good.
Bye-bye.
Me too.
That'd be up to them.
Right.
Well, but you don't want to negotiate on their behalf that way.
They can always have the protest signs outside.
I know, but they may also feel that it's a right for somebody inside not allowed to have a protest sign. Well, I mean, that's ridiculous.
Right, so here's the thing. So we only have a small portion of the campers that are here. Most of them are downtown already, right? And the four or five that are here said they'd rather not have protesters inside. They don't want to be on camera or anything like that.
Okay, so if it's okay with you guys.
Well, that's up to them, sure.
It is.
Yeah. Okay. So they want to have it outside.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. Thank you for asking.
No, thank you, Rob. No, anytime, Rob.
Now we succumbed to this sort of decision by a few people who were inside who didn't want other people to come in, as though that should speak for the entire camp, or even one individual inside who wants to have people coming and going freely. I guess it's an interesting question. You know, can an entire neighborhood decide, for example, in your neighborhood that you can't see visitors because they don't like people with protest signs? In America, generally, this is not true. But it is true in Santa Cruz at this particular point at the River Street Campground.
We try to be helpful. We honestly do. And I'd like to introduce you to Anthony Prince.
Hi, Anthony.
He's the legal eagle behind a lot of this stuff. Watch out for him.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to have the press conference outside.
Did you get one of these?
Oh, I did.
This is Captain Harold, who is kind of the superior to Eric, the director.
And one of the other kind. You didn't get the other one, I
did. The other one's in this
I'll give you the other flyer, too. You don't want to go home without both flyers.
You know? Did you get one of these, Jeff?
Oh, about, you heard conversations between Captain Harold and Phil Posner here at the gate, approaching our Elise and Keith McHenry of Who Not Bombed. Yes. A bunch of us, I guess. So
well, one person should. I mean, don't you think?
Keith can do it. Alicia can do it. I say Alicia's good. Yeah. You're good. I'm good. Anthony's good.
Not you. I'm
in the background.
You better be in the background. That Bible makes me nervous.
If any questions, if you have any doubts.
Right.
Okay, Steve will do it.
Sneaking in, he won't take a flyer, but he runs the press conference. Well, what about MH Can, Steve? I won't get into that with you right now. I know. There's a reason for that, too, as I understand.
Get in there.
So.
The
captain is
inside.
He's
composing himself.
He's well composed, yes.
Not decomposed yet, at least.
So Alicia's arrived with her own sign, respect homeless people, dignity rights, upside down, I might add. All right, that's a little better. All right. And we have Otter holding up two signs. Show it to the cars as well. Hey, Otter, make sure you show it to the vehicles. They actually want to see it. The cars, you got it.
Hey, those are struggles that on both sides.
How do we get to do
everyone? Who's speaking first?
And we were holding up signs for passing cars on River Street, which is, as I mentioned before, becomes Highway 9 shortly down the road.
Are you here to attend the conference?
No, please.
I'll just get it rolling.
Yeah.
Do you want to ask questions first? That's my question. That way we get it.
And don't forget to take media questions, too. We have, again, and it looks like a total now of about 15 or so people. Signs are being held up, no solution, leave ours alone. California Homeless Union t-shirts are on at least three people, maybe four. Hi, and your name is?
Hi, I'm Jamie with the City on a Hill Press.
City on a Hill has made it down from the hill to the city.
Yes, finally.
Jamie, you should give me your email so I'll send you our press releases and such.
Okay.
I'll give you mine, too.
We already have it. It's just a City on a Hill editors.
You got a phone number yourself so we can call you specifically?
Oh, sure.
Here, let me give you a pen and you can write it down. And you know, I'm taking this reporter. He could, of course, be a terrorist agent of some kind, but I doubt it.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
And we're going to be assembling here to
gather around everyone, and we'll get the press conference started. Captain Hale's been good enough to come out and address some of our questions. We will be having some statements from Anthony Prince, the California Homeless Union, Keith McHenry of Who Not Bombs, Robert Norris from Huff, and some others, but we first would like to perhaps ask Captain Harrell some questions about the encampment and address some of the concerns that we have all had, that Conscience in Action has had, and how it's been the Homeless Union. So who would like to ask Captain Harrell the question first, and I'll try to facilitate the conversation if I can. Phil?
Okay. First of all, I want to thank Captain Harrell for his discussions with me over this issue because of our, I think, I'm not sure if you already had guidelines, but I know you revised them.
We did.
Which I obviously appreciated. I think there's one part of this, Harrell, that in our phone conversation, I didn't quite understand.
Okay.
And I would appreciate if you would clarify. Salvation Army staff must receive previous client approval for each visit.
Right.
Does that mean, for example, that if I want to see Jim Stein inside, that I have to call you to get approval? And how easy is that going to be, considering the fact that it's not necessarily easy to find Jim Stein?
Okay. So this is under the privacy concern of the clients, we simply deal with this. I just want to make sure that Jim is okay with having a visitor, right? So the deal is, if you call Jim or talk with Jim downtown or whatever, and he puts you on the list of visitors, we're cool. You come and visit Jim Stein, right? But the deal is, what we don't want is unwelcome visitors or just going around tent to tent, you know, yelling at people, waking them up.
Assuming that that's all that's going to be.
Oh, not even close. No, we have many legitimate visitors every day.
Why are the visits limited to 30 minutes?
One person at a time, all right? One person at a time.
Okay, so as I understand, your answer is the camp is willing to have visitors, but we must call in order to make sure that the resident approves our visit.
Exactly.
Okay.
And anybody could visit as long as the resident approves their visit.
Now, I got a question. Question is,
Alicia was next.
Alicia, you
how come these visits are limited to 30 minutes? I find that very kind of stringent, and I might not be able to get everything I need done and spoke about in 30 minutes.
Okay, that's a very good question. And here's the deal. We worked out in those guidelines that it can go longer than 30 minutes if we know that it's going to. And this is why. We have really limited space inside. I mean, even the table space is very limited, right? So if we have, as an example, 16 visitors, that's more table space than we have. So we can go longer than 30 minutes. The guidelines just included that there would be a request that says, my business is going to take longer than 30 minutes.
Of course, the question then arises whether a person can't have someone in their tent as a visitor. In other words, the much of the area inside this rather cramped campground, and far more, certainly as cramped as the Ross campground, although rather more neatly organized for sure. Why not be able to have someone in your tent if you want to have some privacy and talk to them there? It's kind of assumed here that you'd be sitting outside in this pavilion taking up space, so that if you want to be there for more than 30 minutes, you need to get some sort of advanced approval or scheduling or something. Or maybe even, God help us, walk outside with the person. I know that would be considered a no-no. I still, under the current policy, where you're not allowed to walk outside, you have to go outside on a shuttle. And you can't also take your own transportation. Well, that's a good question. It wasn't clear whether you come in a vehicle. You can't invite someone out in a car. Obviously, it's another issue that... why this should even be a question to me is pretty ridiculous. But point here is that as of Thursday, 3 or 4 days later, no visitors have gone into the camp, at least no homeless visitors that I've heard of, and I don't know, it's not been clear that any visitors have actually come from, that we've heard of, who've been admitted to the camp after having been placed on a visitor's list. We attempted to get some people put on a visitor's list yesterday through the Conscience in Action meeting by contacting Eric, the director, and we got his assurance he was going to do that fairly quickly, but it's a day and a half later, it's about a day later, it's the afternoon of the next day, and that hasn't, as far as I know, happened, though we have heard from Phil Posner, who called me while I was doing this broadcast, saying that he has permission to go inside Or rather, he said he got a phone number from Eric of one of the clients inside, who he told Eric that he knew and he wanted to contact, and apparently Eric went and did that. So I may be able to give you more information now. Actually, now we do have Phil Posner on the line. Hi, Phil.
Hi.
So you've been kind of trying to find out what the specifics are of the visitor policy.
If I understood your question correct, Eric answered in the affirmative, meaning, as he said, it would be cumbersome for everyone, meaning his staff and clients and visitors, if every time they had to go through this process. So once a person, a visitor, is on a client's list, which is which all staff people have, then the visitor can come right now anytime between 10 and 3 every day.
So visiting is limited to those hours?
Yeah, because they're working on the process, and that's what they, you know, right now that's the visiting time.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate your getting that information. We'll see if it actually is the case. If you want to go down there and test it out.
I'm going to go tomorrow, so I'll be able to. I plan to go visit this guy tomorrow, so I'll.
You'll let us know.
Yeah.
That sounds good. I maybe we can interview you before the Sunday broadcast. I mean, I assume things will proceed because not only have you got an assurance, but I kind of. I got a positive impression from Eric when I talked to him. I think his heart's in the right place. The problem with folks is if their heart's in the right place, nonetheless, they're often, you know, compelled by the situation they're in to do sometimes what they don't want to do and so forth.
Okay. So, and I also wanted to ask you about Alicia. Has Alicia drawn up her list? And has she tried to visit the people that she has on her list?
I don't have a direct answer to that, but if you call me later, I can probably find out, or you could also alternately call her. I'm sure she'll be happy to talk to you.
I asked her this morning, and she still hadn't done it. So, you know, I get this. I don't quite understand. I'm on the radio now, right?
You are on the radio.
Right, and I would ask you this question off the radio. Okay, thanks.
All right, well, thank you, Phil.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
If you want to, call me back later.
I will.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. That's activists sort of struggling to get some answers and trying to divide responsibilities as to who's going to, you know, make sure that things are actually operating the way the Salvation Army says they are operating, which maybe they are. Anyway, here's more of that press conference.
Jim, so I'm going to need longer. And as long as the staff knows about it ahead of time, we're okay with that. That's okay. So we can be flexible on that as long as there's a reason. Well, what we don't want is just people hanging out all over all day long for no particular reason. Right? So that's the privacy part that we're trying to control. Yes, ma'am. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Robert next, and then Robert next, and then
follow up on both Alicia's question and Phil's question. First of all, can any member of the staff okay that, or do we have to reach you, the head chief?
You do not have to reach me. Okay. So the member of the staff here is, we have a director and a deputy director. Either one of them can.
And their names are
Eric and Lauren.
And what are contact information for those two?
I can get it to you. I don't know it off the top of my head, but yes, I can get it to you.
And it will. And as of yet, I haven't gotten it, but. And I have tried to reach Harold Laubach. That's Harold, Captain Harold, the guy who's talking with us. But so far he hasn't returned a call.
Be available to members of the public who want to come in and see their friend.
Of course. Matter of fact, we end up posting it.
Okay. And then secondly, are you clarifying that if you're on a list, you can come and go at any time for a period of 30 minutes without that kind of prior approval? If you've gotten the agreement from the person inside that they want to see you,
that they're okay with you visiting at whatever hour? Yeah, I don't see a reason why not. Okay. Yeah, I mean, we're staffed.
Of course, it's not at whatever hour, apparently. It's between 10 and 3. So this is a significant restriction that was at least has been imposed for the time being. And again, as you heard, with some people it's just fine. You heard Phil saying, oh, that's reasonable. You know, they have to work things out and so forth. I tend to look at things from the other perspective. Is it should be as open as possible unless there's actually a restrictive reason to do that. and one shouldn't be justifying the behaviors of authorities limiting people's rights and freedoms and assuming that there's a good reason for it, or trying to suggest they have compassion, cozy up to them, and so forth. I often have trouble with that, both with my fellow activists and with the authorities themselves, or people who are friends of authorities.
24/7. I mean, there's staff here 24/7. There's security here 24/7. So as long as you're on the list of visitation from the client, yeah, we have no limitations on what time of the day you come visit.
That is the boss, Captain Harold Laubach. I think I have his name right. But now we're told that isn't the case. Notice how unqualified the statement was when suddenly, days later, it's pretty significantly circumscribed. And more important than that, no one has gotten in as of yet. Though we're going to have one person, Phil Posner, who's eager to show how he can work with authorities, which, as I said, to me can be problematic. But, you know, everybody has a different style. And we'll see what happens.
Okay. And Leisha, we have this young woman here, please.
Yes, ma'am.
You just mentioned that there are staff here 24/7.
Correct.
Why is it then that the shuttle vans only operate until 9 p.m.? Why do people not have freedom to come and go as they please? I believe it's a right for human dignity to have freedom of movement. Why can the people here not walk out of this gate? Why only you, because of your badge? What makes you higher than the people in here, that you have the right to come and go through this door as you please, but my friends in there do not?
Okay, so there's a couple of reasons. One, our biggest issue is safety. We all notice, right, there is no sidewalk here. None. To even find a sidewalk, you have to cross the street. So because of that, we limited walk-ons and walk-offs. What we do not limit is bicycling, right? So
and before we go any further, I think I mentioned this later in the broadcast. This is a novel excuse, pretext, or let's be generous, reason for claiming that people inside can't come and go as they wish. It's actually part of the general shelter mentality. The people inside have to be regulated and controlled, like you have to say, prisoners, animals, children, who are have to be watched in some case, cannot be allowed out. Or we have to have concerns, and this was what the city said last year when it ran the campground, the anxieties of the neighbors. And as I said, they had three levels of security. They had a police station, they had first alarm security guards, and they had internal monitors. Originally, and finally, the police station disappeared after a couple months. Huge amount of expense with all that. But the idea that it's being done for safety is pretty, in my view, preposterous. It could be that Harold believes that. He certainly is sounding like he does. And maybe he's simply taking it from his superior or his peers or his contacts in the city. But in fact, people walk up and down that road all the time, and not just on the other side where there is a sidewalk. I don't even know if there's much of a sidewalk on the other side. I think there actually is. But it's part of the road. It's not illegal to walk on that side. You have a large kind of storage container placed along the road bed next to the road, which protects people walking nearby. So it's because it you know, it essentially presents a large block between which the fence and the outside of the storage container, there's essentially kind of an area that the cars would simply not be driving. And also it's gravel or dirt. So it's hogwash to suggest it's a safety issue. Although maybe there's some insurance aspect. I mean, I can always speculate. But if that were really the case, I think it would have been claimed by the city last year. But perhaps the city city government has declined to the point where they don't mind citing bigotry as their basis for activity rather than safety. And maybe the Salvation Army is a little wary about saying that.
So, by
bicycle is considered a vehicle. I'm pretty sure the state of California does. People want a bicycle on and off. That's perfectly fine. But we do not allow just people to walk on and walk off because there's no sidewalk outside the property. Okay? And I know you had a multiple-part question, but I don't remember this.
Why you?
I'm the administrator. And I therefore, am responsible to sign the contract.
Please let me finish my question. Why you have more power than my friends in there? Did they in there elect you? Did the people who you are administering choose that you will have authority over them, or is this a coercive hierarchy enforced by the state?
Well, I didn't sign a contract with the state. I signed a contract with the county. And therefore, as the contract with the county states, that myself and the staff members of our organization are the people that control this facility. So I would say your question is a valid question, but it needs to go to the county.
Why is it safe for the staff to walk out of here like you just walked out, but it's not safe for anybody else?
Well, actually, the staff isn't allowed to walk out either.
You did.
Because I drove here. I don't walk off the property. I just came out of the fence.
Well, we're all outside right now. How come those people can't come out like we are right now?
In fact, we are all off the property, which is public property. It's the right of way along the sidewalk. It's city property, actually, but it's open for pedestrians to walk up and down. There's no "Do not walk here" signs.
Yeah, can you please invite some camp? Yeah,
They don't want to.
They don't want to. Is that
we actually asked them as we began, and they specifically requested to not be on camera, to not speak with anyone outside here. They don't want to be a part of the press conference or the protest.
But they're not allowed to walk out, right?
To walk off property. No.
Out. They're not allowed to walk out.
Well, actually, they can walk out to come to get their things out of their belongings out of the containers. Their bicycles are stored out here,
right?
Well, if they get their bicycle, they can ride away.
Are bicycles being provided for people here?
I do not know. I mean, we don't provide bicycles. That's not part of the contract. But our contract provides from the city. The city is a partner with the county. The contract provides tents, sleeping bags, the facility, the buildings, the bathrooms, the drinking water, the hand washing stations, storage.
Did you get a shower yet?
We're working on it. We've requested it from the
city. Chief, shout out.
Excuse me?
You have a question?
Oh,
yeah, how many people are staying here today?
61.
61. And how long will they be allowed to stay here?
Great question. As of right now, our contract for this property ends on June 30th.
I have a resident saying they were not invited out here today. A resident inside there just told me that they were not invited out.
Would you like to come out?
Would you like to come out? Do you ensure that this person will not be subject to any sort of reprisals for coming and speaking to the media?
Yep, I sure do.
I had a question.
Hold on. Do you pinky promise?
No, we're not doing a pinky promise thing.
A little bit more adult than pinky promise.
Yeah. I had a question just for perception purposes. We're talking about the kind of the razor wire and whatnot.
Yes.
Is that going to be taken down and make it more a welcoming atmosphere and stuff?
I want to point out, Steve is a friend of mine. He's the fellow talking and asking about the razor wire and also sort of master of ceremonying this thing. Someone has just asked really the key question. Can a member of the public inside, one of the residents inside, come out and talk? Because she said she wants to come out. And it's hard to... Well, let me see if I can determine more clearly whether she was allowed to come out. In fact, if you go check out the Cruel and Inhumane video on YouTube, that is to say the video which is titled Cruel and Inhumane, you see that shortly thereafter she was, one of the residents was allowed out and actually was interviewed. And so that happened. But it doesn't distract from the fact that the master of ceremonies here didn't pause to wait to say, okay, that's really our issue. Are you letting this person out? Let's have them outside so we can see there is this free interchange, not just in assurances and promises, but in actuality. Now, in fact, she was allowed out shortly thereafter.
I learned last week that the perception of the barbed wire may be seen as negative, right?
Well, she's answering a question. Can we do that, and then we can... There we go.
So the perspective of the barbed wire can be seen as negative. So now that said, the barbed wire has been on the fence for at least 2 years when the city installed the fence 2 years ago, right? So I have no problem with the barbed wire coming off. I've actually sent a letter to the city manager, Martin Bernal, last week and requested that the city come and take the barbed wire off.
What was his response?
I have not yet received a response.
But you have made the request.
I have. All right. And not only have I believe that is a city councilman, Crone, I believe, has also made the same request.
Would the rabbi have another question, Captain?
When we talked, it was my understanding that people needed permission to leave and come back.
No.
So, okay, this is an interesting issue. I didn't understand this. So Jim Stein cannot leave these premises even if he asks permission. Okay, so explain that.
So 14 hours a day, the city provides busing to go on and off all over town.
Right.
Jim can get on any bus that comes in and out from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m.
How much does that cost?
But he can't just...
Does he provide that bus?
You're interrupting.
Yeah, please, now hold on, let's... we had a quick...
Because there's a lady from inside that needs to see.
Okay, see, I didn't understand that. Residents can leave and they can come back. I said, okay, that was important. And I think that when we talked, you made the good point that you were concerned about people's employment. So, for example...
Wait a minute. I'm going to interrupt you because are you saying they can leave and walk away from here along this path?
No. So the deal, they can be...
They cannot.
Okay. They can leave by van 14 hours a day, right? The van, from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m., the van goes on and off every hour. Okay, so they can choose any van ride, they can be out all day, they can come back at 9 p.m., anything like that. Medical emergencies, obviously we have the ability and commonly call law enforcement and medical personnel, right, hospital, ambulances, things like that. So that's as well. We even, if for people that have employment, if they have a ride away from here, we make exceptions for anyone that has employment, schooling, employment, or meetings, at, you know, official meetings with whatever, Department of Housing, we'll make special arrangements for all of those things. That's fine. Yes, we do that.
Right, so, because you had made the point to me that I'm still not finished.
Well, please finish your
question. Okay, so it's my understanding that if Jim Stein, for example, is working at McDonald's, and he gets off at midnight, as long as he's arranged to be allowed back in at 12:30, okay.
Not a problem. Sorry.
And this way, please. This one of the residents has a question. You want to ask?
So again, this kind of plays into the narrative that if someone has a acceptable middle class job, they will be allowed, in spite of the safety danger of not having a sidewalk, to come back at midnight and walk in, with the buses stopping at 10, even though they go every hour. Everyone else has to go back and forth on the buses every hour, or if they have one, have a bicycle of their own from the storage locker, which is put there by the side of the fence. Well, access is limited to those who have bicycles, who are willing to put up with the who have to put up with the hourly schedule, to have an acceptable job outside. So if you're a good working class person, you have rights that, I don't know, the lazy layabouts or people going to concerts or trying to do events in the evening, or, you know, have some meeting they want to meet with a friend outside, can't do. It's important to clarify this. Not to be said that this whole system of a campground with significantly more liberal rules than the shelters that the other Salvation Army shelters, for the 7th Avenue and the Laurel Street shelters, or the homeless lack of services centers, Paige Smith and Paul Lee Loft have, certainly an improvement over their approach. But if you're talking about basic rights for people of the kind that you would get if you lived in a hotel, or if you had a home of your own, if you're staying at a friend's house, or if you were sleeping outside, you would have, are simply not there. And the issue has to be, if these restrictions are to be provided, what's the justification? Let's look at it very carefully and see that we're not simply responding to vicious, false, and dehumanizing stereotypes.
You said we have to come in the van, which we do, but sometimes they change the schedule. We don't even know what the schedule is. I was out there 2 hours waiting for the van to come by, and it never did show.
And this is the woman who came outside, who actually is a resident of the camp.
She's concerned about reprisals, so I think we should go closer to her.
I'm asking him. Why does it change so much, the schedule?
Okay, I'm going to make a couple of assumptions. It is one is I don't control the bus schedule or the driver because the driver and the vehicle are actually provided by the city. Okay, it's not provided by the Salvation Army. So that said, the first answer would be I will ask the city about the driver and why there are changes to the bus schedule. Okay. The second thing is I think maybe we need to either broaden out the bus schedule or to make it more flexible. Okay. Yeah. So any
the voice you're hearing across the street shouting is Sea Otter, who works with Food Not Bombs, who claims, according to Keith McHenry, who works with him at the Food Not Bombs afternoon in the weekend, the meals that were provided at the main post office, that he attempted to visit a friend there and was turned down, and he was denouncing Captain Old for essentially misrepresenting the situation. You'll be continuing to hear him throughout the broadcast shouting from across the street, which makes it a little hard to hear some of what is said, but it also kind of gives a reality factor to what's being said and is a commentary on the pleasant narrative that's being spun by the people who are talking, Steve Plage, Captain Harold, myself, perhaps others, and a voice of dissent from outside. But before we get back to it, let's hear a little music. The ramp up of the proposed war in Iraq and Iran, actually in Iran based upon pretexts about Iraq and Iranians being around there and supporting the Houthis over in Yemen, while of course we're supporting the massive murder by Saudi Arabian bombs. Here's a song from Phil Oakes of the 60s.
Protesting against the war in Vietnam to a point where it became a sort of a mindless habit. And we seem to be losing our effectiveness because the administration, those in power, always have longevity on their side. At a certain point, you keep saying indecent, indecent, and the words lose their meaning. It's just the sound of syllables. It's not a word anymore. So last June, some of us in America declared the war over from the bottom up and celebrated the end of the war. And we've been celebrating ever since. And the war, which of course was never declared. And it's the use of absurdity. It's the use of a form of street theater, rather than just straight moral protest. The use of theatrical, changing reality in your heads. So here's a song called "The War Is Over," which I think can be applied to the Cold War. I think it's time that a lot of people in a lot of countries declared the Cold War over, which is sort of strangling the earth at the moment. People, you can recreate your own reality. This is what people forget when they become children of the media. Silent soldiers on a silver screen, framed in fantasies and drugged in dreams, unpaid actors of the mystery. The mad director knows that freedom will not make you free. And what's this got to do with me? Use their vision just to blind the blind.
Boys and players of a grisly game. One is guilty and the other gets to point the blame. Pardon me if I refrain. This country is too young to die.
Couple of assumptions. It is one is I don't control the bus schedule or the driver because the driver and the vehicle are actually provided by the city. Okay, it's not provided by the Salvation Army. So that said, the first answer would be I will ask the city about the driver and why there are changes to the bus schedule. Okay. The second thing is I think maybe we need to either broaden out the bus schedule or to make it more flexible. Okay. Yeah, so any of those things are possible. The problem is I don't know because I'm not the provider of the bus or the driver. Yeah, it's the city that does that.
Okay. There's a fellow back here who hasn't been very patient. You have your question?
Yes. Why, and I've heard this story so many times, there's got to be something too. Why did the Salvation Army tell so many people, including Mr. Sea Otter over there, that the people from Tent City were the only ones that were going to be here?
Okay, that's an easy question, believe it or not. Before the cleanup of the Ross encampment could happen, the courts designated that the city must provide enough bed space for everyone that was residing in the Ross encampment at night.
Let me rephrase the question. That man over there was told that only Tent City people were going to be in the Ross River City street camp.
By who?
By Salvation Army. That's why that man is angry. Say what? But it's the same question, though, but it's in a different form. You just said that you guys did, in fact, tell some people that only 10 city people. Was that on paper? Was that a fact?
And the point here is a point we've been making, or I've been making on this show, is that this campground and previously the Depot Park, the area near the Depot Park that was initially proposed and then shut down because loud cries of bigotry and all the other spaces priority has been given to people from Ross Camp because the intention of the city is not to really provide them with alternate space, but to appear to be providing them, even at the expense of other people outside who will be either denied or even kicked out of these spaces to provide space for Ross Camp. Now, I don't know that anyone was actually kicked out, but, you know, there's only a certain number of spaces in these shelters, and if you reach a certain capacity, that's it. And the capacity is far below not just the number of people in the city at large who are homeless, 1,000 to 1,500 to 2,000, but the people who are in the Ross Camp, which is 200 to 300 or so. So it was ridiculous to claim that they actually had space, but they claimed it anyway, because otherwise they would be in a position where the police could not enforce could not move on them because one of the claims of the lawsuit that was being leveled against the city by the Ross Camp Rough Riders was that they're violating the federal court's requirement that you can't eliminate a person's shelter without having some alternate shelter. It's actually not quite that way. But their claim, the claim is you can't ticket someone for sleeping and you can't criminalize them, give them a criminal offense, unless you have a place for them to go. And so in theory, they can and did run them out of Ross Camp because they were saying, oh, well, we won't give you tickets for sleeping. We'll just give you tickets for all these other things, but we won't talk about the sleeping, even though we really mean the sleeping, but we don't want the court to know that. That is, you might say, the cynical view, the realistic view, or the claim that many of us have and that we're trying to show by getting documentation, which the city attorney and the city manager's office is stalling on. At the recent city council meeting 2 days ago, it was stalled even further into June of this. It wasn't put on the agenda for May 28th full, and it was stalled further until June and maybe even later, who knows. But it's been stalled since January, that kind of statistic, which will let us know what's going on. And even then, we're only going to get statistics for 2018, not for what's been happening this year in 2019. That seems to be what I took away from the city council meeting. The question here by the friend of the people inside some of the people inside the River Street camp, and one of the persons outside, Sea Otter, was shouting angrily across the street and denouncing the River Street camp here, was that special preference was being given to people from the Ross camp as a way of, in essence, justifying the city's demolition of that camp to the detriment of not just the people in the Ross camp, who will be denied the shelter, their property, everything else, and a very few of them given some motel vouchers, access to a few shelters, but you can only carry two bags with you and get out at the end at dawn. And then to this one campground where only 61 people can come and it's full up. But to the entire homeless community who now face an influx of lots of other homeless people with no place to go, which means that the people who are currently being tolerated or keeping a low profile have to retreat deeper and are more likely to be driven away or to be made more visible by the fact that other homeless people who had a place in the Ross camp now no longer do. And this is being framed in terms of how come you wouldn't let ordinary people into this River Street campground. And the answer is, it isn't for ordinary people. This is our excuse for killing the Ross camp. But they certainly don't want to say that.
For the first 5 days of when the Ross encampment was closed, we were so as I said, so the court told the city that they
nobody
had to provide.
Knew what they were doing at the time. I'm sorry. I'm just trying to. Okay. I'm sorry.
So for the first 5 days, we made sure that we had open spaces here and the other two shelters in town for anyone that wanted to come from the Ross encampment. From anyone. Okay. So we for 5 days we did that. After 5 days.
And that seems to say implicitly that in order to do that, they had to make sure that other people who might have wanted to get in could not get in. But you see, he's not saying that. And, of course, it sounds like that question was never explicitly posed.
And we weren't receiving any more.
If Water got on the list, he could get in now.
As long as he hasn't been banned for behavioral issues, yes. If he's ever been violent or you
I don't
know anything
about
like that.
All that. But some of the folks, there's a lot of rock star personalities in one spot. And who decrees who should be banned? You know, there should be, like, at least on that, some kind of way you can appeal. You know what I mean? A grievance system or something, man.
Sure. I agree.
You know?
I agree.
Is there one?
Now, let me ask another question. A lot of
people. Let him answer first.
I'm sorry.
So we have a list of guidelines that we turn in with our county contracts. Say these are the rules of every shelter program that we operate here in the county.
That's right. But the in and out, like, I was in this River Street camp before, okay? The in and out, a lot of these rules are similar to before. So why are we questioning you on some, and when it was probably the city that said, hey, this, in order to get a contract, this is how it's got to be? Would you do that in and of yourself without the city telling you to? Would you implement these rules?
No, but would you change the rules according to concerns of the residents and visitors?
Right. As long as it did not...
Yes or no?
Well, it's not a yes or no question.
Okay.
As long as it did not impact safety or privacy, yes, we have the ability to change the rules, as long as it doesn't impact safety or privacy of the clients.
Anthony, please.
Can I ask you a couple questions?
I'd also like to be on the side.
Well, yes.
First,
now, that's a significant claim, if true, but the... I really have my doubts. Again, I but you know, let's take this man at his face value. Let's take Captain Harold, you know, as though it's everything he's saying is sincerely said and true and said in good faith. So he's saying that unless it has to do with privacy or safety, they can change the rules. That's something we should take up. But again, there is another broader issue that came up at the Conscious in Action meeting 2 days later, which is that all this hubbub about 61 people really is being done. It's a focus on 61 when what we really need to keep in mind while we're doing this is we're really talking about a broader population of people who are homeless and an even broader population of people who are in danger of becoming homeless because of rent, because of medical bills, because of job loss, because of any number of things. So to deal with the false narrative around homelessness and housing that the city is generally spinning in order to continue to gobble up money from state, federal, and county agencies without actually providing any really meaningful, significant value for that money to homeless people. At the same time, of course, this creates anger among those who are nervous about the visible presence of homeless people, who then feel that less needs to be done for the homeless because so much money is already being uselessly spent, instead of suggesting that what's really the real problem is poverty, pimpery, and a city refusal to really address the necessary emergency shelters or emergency campgrounds or emergency housing or emergency rent control that needs to be put into effect. People are the city to write a false narrative that they're doing everything they can. There are all kinds of consultants who are examining this. They're all following procedures and processes and smart solutions and housing first and pathways to housing and transitional encampments into non-existent housing. In order to save money and in order to stop public outrage at how homeless people are being treated and sort of to domesticate homeless people are there to say you should be so grateful for the crumbs you're getting. People are demonized. They are treated like massive combination of junkies, crazies, bums, and unsanitary, rude, ungrateful, service-resistant individuals, which really denies the reality of how ordinary people would react if they're put in the situation of homeless people, generally.
My name's Anthony Prince. I'm an attorney. I represent the California Homeless Union. I'm the general counsel.
All right.
So a few follow-up questions for you,
yes,
if you don't mind. First thing is, you refer to people in here as your clients?
Yes.
Okay, so when you say they're your clients, you have a contractual relationship with them? Are you providing service to them?
That's correct.
Okay, have they signed a document attesting to that relationship? Do you have a copy of that document?
I do.
No papers. Okay. Yes, there is one. When we do intake of each person, the county, and maybe the city, but
Harold
definitely Lubbock, the county, ensures or requires that each person in any of our homeless shelter programs does HMIS, right? That is an intake process to get their information into the homeless management information system so we know how to prioritize and provide the services that they are looking for.
Okay. So my question to you is,
yes,
the rules, I haven't seen these rules and regulations, but they sign off on the rules and regulations.
Correct.
Are they given an opportunity to consult with an attorney regarding signing that contract?
That's a good question.
Do you have an answer to that question?
I currently do not know.
So as you stand here, you're not aware. As you stand here, to your knowledge, persons who sign contracts as you're calling them,
yeah,
are not given an opportunity to review that contract with an attorney, are they?
Actually, they are given an opportunity.
It says right
they
out there.
They just have to sign it before they move in.
Well, let me just get, I want to understand what you're saying here.
Yeah.
So what I'm asking you is that, you, generally speaking, when someone is in a position and required to sign a contract or there's a negotiation, there's no negotiation, right?
That's correct.
So they're in no position to bargain over the terms of the contract,
that's
are
correct.
They? So they more or less have to sign the contract as a condition
if
of being
they
in here. If they want to stay in here, they have to sign
that
the contract.
Correct.
Okay. And on the contract itself, is there an express provision that they are advised to discuss the contract with an attorney, or they have the right to discuss it with an attorney before signing it? Is that in the contract?
I am not sure.
You're not sure? You have a copy right here?
The contract is...
Hold on, hold on.
All right, we'll look at it.
A little less argumentative and a little more...
Excuse me, Steve. Let me finish.
We don't need any tone policing. People are angry, and they're justifiably angry.
Well, then, I
have a question. So, these are some of the poorest people in the area.
This is Olga.
And they are currently being pressured into purchasing water, because they are the only water that's being provided to them is being provided out of a barrel. Will you please, with the press, go in there and drink a cup of water out of that barrel?
I will bring the cup of water out here and drink it. Yes, it's potable water.
Can we have the press videotape you to ensure that you are getting water from that barrel?
Yeah, that's perfectly fine.
Let's do it.
Right now you want to hold off till we get some more questions.
Right, so let's finish the questions, and then we'll
agree to do it.
I was talking to some of the people that were...
I never actually saw the water drinking. I don't know if it actually happened. Maybe it did. Again, there was a video taken of all this. Check it out at the website Cruel and Inhumane. People from Ross Camp have been dispersed throughout Santa Cruz.
At Sweet Not Bombed yesterday, and a couple of people said that they couldn't stay here because they had ridden their bike directly instead of taking the shuttle. Is that accurate? You can't get
No, because we actually allow bicycle travel to go on and off the property.
Oh.
Yeah, so that's not completely true.
Since when has that policy been changed? Because when I was here on, I believe it was Thursday evening. On Thursday evening I came by and was given a very different story, and I have it recorded, of being told extremely different things compared to what you were saying. So I'm going to be providing that to Robert, and we'll be comparing what your staff has been educated on. Has your staff been educated regarding all of these massive changes in policy that it seemed to have taken place over the weekend?
I don't believe they've any taken place over the weekend, but on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, I've witnessed people ride on and off the property with bicycles, so I know it's possible. I've seen it happen many times.
When I was here and I tried to speak to people, I was told that the only way on and off the property was in that van. And a resident here has confirmed that the van is the only way that people come and go. So, you know, please ask if anyone would like to ride on a bicycle and demonstrate that this is permitted.
If anyone comes on and off, or they have their bicycle, we don't provide the bicycle, but if anyone has their bicycle, they are allowed to ride on and off.
Are there any questions?
Yeah, a couple more questions. So let me ask you this.
And in the course, when I was there, I saw no one ride in and out on their bicycle. But, again, my attention, I was there for about an hour, was distracted by running around and audioing all this and asking questions and so forth. And also, there was an independent live stream being done by Olga, the woman who just asked that question, probably one of the most militant activists who had come to this protest. And I don't know if she has posted that online. She sent me a copy. I'm going to try to play some of it. I may do that on Sunday for the more militant version of the River Camp, the River Street Camp, the 1220 River Street Camp controversy, particularly if the promises haven't been kept. It's still a little unclear what's going on. In fact, to me, it's quite unclear.
First of all, I think you said a moment ago that the reason...
You have a right to enter by bicycle.
What I want to know is, you're indicating that a person can ride in and out of here on a bicycle that they own. If they don't have a bicycle, no bicycle is provided, correct?
Not by us.
Okay.
If someone provides them a bicycle, yes, perfectly fine.
Okay,
but
that was
funds to provide bicycles.
Okay, all right. So in other words, you're restricting people. You're saying that people can only come in and out here other than the bus by bicycle, and you're not providing people with bicycles in the event they don't have them, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so they're limited in their ability to have ingress and egress to whether they have a bicycle or not, correct?
Or the van ride,
I said put
That's
the
correct.
Van aside.
Yes, okay.
Okay, so, all right. And the second thing is, your contract is between the Salvation Army and the county?
Correct.
How much are you getting from the contract?
I don't know off the top of my head.
Did you sign the contract?
I did not. My headquarters signed the contract.
Okay, and who in your headquarters signed the contract?
It would be Colonel Tollerud from Los Angeles.
Tollerud?
Yes.
Okay.
It's got to be a guess, but it's Tollerud.
Okay. Now, you also said that the reason you don't let people walk in and out of here, a person who's inside this facility can't just go where they want to go or need to go, is because of a safety issue?
Right.
Okay, is there any other reason why you have a regulation prohibiting people from simply walking in and out?
I do not believe so.
That is the sole reason that you're preventing people from walking in and out of here is because there's no sidewalk, paved sidewalk in front of the facility.
We were told that by the city. Because they operated it.
Who told you that from the city?
City manager's office.
So Mr. Bernal told you?
Or one of his employees.
Okay, so I want to understand what you're saying. So what you're saying is that you were informed by the city that what exactly did they tell you?
That there's no walking egress in and off the property.
City council meeting right here. Yeah. Go ahead.
Anyway,
what are you saying?
Because there's a lack of sidewalks, because it's a stone lot. The stone lot affects people in wheelchairs and things like that. It's obviously not easy to transport in a wheelchair if you
have
stone.
So your enforcement of the rule that permits people to have ingress and egress only if they're on the bus or if they have a bicycle is because the city told you that persons were not allowed on this unpaved portion in front of the facility? Is that right? The city, in other words, you're prohibiting people from walking in and out of here if they don't have a bicycle and they're not on the bus because the city told you that they would not permit people to be in this space. Is that what you're telling us?
When you say people, are you referring to clients or to anyone?
Well, why would it be different for someone in here than just an ordinary person in the city of Santa Cruz? Just a minute. Excuse me. Just with regard to safety. This
right.
is a public area, correct?
I assume so, yes.
Okay. So I'm trying to get what the difference would be in terms of safety.
I have a doctor's appointment that I need to go to, but I would like to interject something.
Go ahead.
I'm a resident here.
What's your name?
I'm Gary Crane. People, the news people have dealt with.
And before we hear Gary, who actually gives a positive account of what's happening inside, which is his right and important to hear for sure, notice that the issue that Anthony Prince is trying to raise with Captain Harold is how come ordinary people can walk up and down here, but you're not allowing people to walk in and out of this campground here if it's really a safety hazard? Right? Is the city telling you you can't do this, or is this a decision made by Salvation Army? And this is really important, for the lawsuit, because it indicates the kinds of restrictions that the city is putting on homeless people that it has forced out of Ross Camp and the kinds of problems it's creating. But he was interrupted by an individual from the camp who wants to, I believe he either is from this camp living there now or is from a previous iteration of the camp when it was in force last year.
With me before, I am a client and a resident here, and my perspective is this. Since I've been here, I haven't had a policeman root through my property and throw my things away. I haven't received a ticket for trespassing.
That's good.
I have slept at night without being bothered by the police.
Okay. Were you bothered by the police outside of here before?
The people that have run this place have been helpful and considerate.
Mm-hmm.
They make exceptions to the rules. Like, I have a doctor's appointment I have to go to. They're letting me go instead of waiting until noon. They've been helpful and considerate. I think that there's not a whole lot that they could do, considering the rules that they have to abide by, that they could do to better help us.
And, of course, that's the real question, which his interruption has at least delayed an answer from Captain Harold on this issue. In other words, is it something imposed by the city or something the Salvation Army has decided that people can't come and go?
Good.
I mean, you would think that this actually was probably a Salvation Army requirement because that's what they do at their other shelters. I don't think people are allowed to come and go as they choose. If they go, they leave and they don't get to come back. That's how it was last year in the city. Now, I don't know for sure that that's the case. I don't think they run shuttles with the same regularity out of their other shelters. I hadn't heard that they do. If they do, maybe they do. That would be new to me, but it could be.
Their rules that they have to abide by have put constraints on their ability to help us. But for the most part...
And that's the question. Are there city rules that are putting constraints? He's saying there are, but he doesn't know. Or if he does, it's not being clear that where that information is coming from.
They have done everything within their power to be helpful and considerate. And I wanted to say that.
Hold on.
And that's a positive perspective. But it isn't necessarily true. It's one that he's trying to give the benefit of the doubt to the people who are helping the 61 people, the Salvation Army, inside this campground. What's really happening here is quite historic. And I hadn't realized it until I began this, well, I'm in the middle of this broadcast. This is the first time I have ever heard shelter providers getting a grilling from people who are sympathetic to their clients, who are critical of how other shelters are operated, who are critical of the process by which the Salvation Army has in the past operated its shelters. This kind of public dialogue has never happened before, to my recollection. So this is quite historic.
Harold here is okay. Answering our questions. If we have no more questions for him...
That means, can I just say one thing real quick? That was a great thing, but that means that everybody not staying in here is subject to everything he said he's grateful for while he's here. He's grateful that people aren't rifling through his things and he's not getting trespass tickets. But there's only 60 people here. Everyone else is being subject to exactly that right now.
Right. Do we have any more questions for Captain Harold?
Yeah, I have some.
And of course, again, Plaich is cutting off. Do we have any more questions for you? In other words, cutting off the answer to that question. Who decides this come-and-goes policy? Is it because the city is requiring it of you, or because you've decided you're going to do it yourself? Because you probably do it elsewhere at other shelters. I mean, really important questions that are being shoveled aside. I'm frustrated by what I'm hearing Steve Plaich do. At the time, I either wasn't aware of it, I was distracted by something else, I was focusing on my audioing, but that's a concern I have now as I listen to it.
Let me hear. I have an appointment in Watsonville. 30 minutes.
We're going to wrap it up.
I appreciate your answering some questions here. Are you willing to answer some written questions that we would submit to you?
I am. I'm very, okay. Yes.
Okay. We'll have some written questions for
sure.
You as soon as we're able to assemble those. You're agreeing that...
I don't know if I do, but you can write it down here.
Rabbi Posner has my email address. I think him and I emailed a few days ago.
Okay, and could I ask you this? Could you please provide us with a copy of the contract? Can you obtain a copy of the contract between the county and Salvation Army for this facility? You'll provide that to us?
I will first ask the county to make sure that's legal to do so.
Well, it's a public record. Wouldn't it be a public record? It's a county. I am. I don't understand.
I don't know. But the second they gave me approval to do so, yes, I will.
Okay, and also, will you give us a copy of the document that you're requiring people to sign as a condition of being in this facility?
No problem.
Do you have one here? Can you get us one right now?
It's in my email.
One, please.
Okay.
One more question for this young lady, and then we're going to let Captain Harold go.
So I've been informed that there is one solar shower that was provided by a resident. Why are residents providing their own showers? And I understand that you're working on getting portable showers for, you know, at some point in the future. What is the date that there will be showers?
So currently the city set up the shower arrangement with HSC down the street, and to where they have agreed to provide showers for all of our clients, and so that is what we're using until we can get a shower unit put here. So I don't know the date yet of the arrival of the shower.
And HSC is, of course, the Homeless Lack of Services Center at 115 Coral Street, which is about 5 blocks away, but of course they're not allowed to walk to the shower, so they have to be bused to the showers at city expense, and only during the bus schedule that now happens every hour during the day, I think with lunch breaks for people running the vans who are city employees, if I am understanding properly, not the Salvation Army employees. Quite a runaround, and you'll hear people talking here in this discussion about why can't somebody wants to take someone to a house for a shower, can they do it there? Why not? Oh, because they're not part of the van approach, unless they get special permission. A lot of concerns and questions are coming up. Back to it.
If a group of concerned residents and faith workers, and you know, if we want to bring solar showers, would we be permitted to provide solar showers for the residents to use them?
As long as it didn't create an environmental issue, yes, very much so.
How would we avoid creating environmental issues?
I'm not an environmentalist.
I am willing to go down right now and buy some solar showers. If I bring them, will you let people hook them up?
Can I ask one last question? So if someone inside here wanted to go visit a friend, and they don't have a bicycle, and they're not going to be on the bus because the bus is not here, you wouldn't let them simply walk down to their friend's house to take a shower, is that correct?
Would
they be prohibited from walking out here and taking a shower at a friend's house? You wouldn't let them out for that?
during the day?
Yes.
Is there a reason they couldn't use the van?
Well, let's say they elected to walk because they for exercise and they live in America and it's their right to walk up and down the street.
Right.
Suppose they made that choice and they simply said, well, I'm going to walk over to my friend's house, take a shower. You would not let them out, would you?
No.
Okay, I don't have any further
questions. Thank you, Captain Harrell. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Harrell.
Can I ask another question?
Thank you, everyone.
He's right out of time.
Refer them to me. A couple people have my email address, and I will gladly answer them in writing.
Thank you.
All right. Let me talk to the
media. And I want to say that I have declarations from people that are inside, as much as the gentleman just said that he was grateful, and I appreciate that. I'd be very grateful, too, if I was no longer getting harassed by the police. But I have declarations from two people inside here that say that they feel like they're in jail. So we heard from one person that said he was grateful. But I've got declarations from more than one person that say this feels like jail. And although they're grateful for not having the cops harass them and not having people, you know, tear up their stuff, it comes at a personal sacrifice of your rights and your freedom. And, you know, we can do better than that. We can provide this without taking away your rights and your freedom. That's what I advocate for.
Wes, I noticed a member of the media in there. Have you requested permission to go inside?
I'd love to hear that part here.
You might want to try asking permission to be inside since I see another member of the press there. And on what basis they were permitted in.
And we asked that question of the director of 2 days later when he spoke to us, the Conscience in Action members and Huff members by phone. And he acknowledged that a member of the media was allowed in, but we were not. And that in spite of the claim that, the residents did not want media members inside, apparently only special media members are allowed inside, we didn't get a clear answer as to why that had happened.
I have to dissect these answers. It's hard to understand. Can they come and go or can they not? Only with a bicycle. The visits are 30 minutes, but if I get special permission, they can be more than 30 minutes. I mean, it's like these are rules or they're not rules. I mean, we're concerned for safety, but we just saw a gentleman come out, walk out, get on his bike, and then ride it away. If we're concerned for safety, why are we only concerned for safety, but we can make special exceptions? A lot of this stuff makes absolutely no sense to me.
Hold on, let her speak.
He's already in, and he can come and go, but there's people that I spoke to yesterday that couldn't enter because they came originally on their bike, so they didn't have special approval. They have to come on their shuttle. There's a woman that lives here that said that they have to come on the shuttle with their bike, so that's why they're not staying here. And there have been several people that are homeless in the city of Santa Cruz that weren't from the Ross camp that have been turned away and told that they can't stay here because they're not from the Ross camp.
Okay. Well, all right. I don't know if you got some media here, but I'll tell you right now, I think there's some real issues here about false imprisonment. What I hear so far is that people do not have the freedom to simply leave the facility, come and go at will. What I see here, what I hear here so far, is that people were made to sign a contract when they had no opportunity to actually bargain for the terms of the contract. Under the law, that's called a contract of adhesion, and it's unconscionable and void on its face in many cases. What I hear here is that the city apparently the city is dictating. I don't know how this happened, but somehow or other, the city has, we'll find out, the city has instructed Salvation Army, even though the city doesn't have a contract with them, the county does, but the city has instructed the Salvation Army that because there's no sidewalk here, that's the rationale and the sole rationale for not letting people in and out of this facility of their own free will. And you heard my last question to Captain
Hero.
If a person in this camp simply wanted to walk out right now because they have a friend down the street, wanted to walk over, visit his friend, take a shower, he or she would not be permitted to leave this facility. I've been practicing law for 20 years, and I think I smell false imprisonment here.
I have a question.
And I think if the city is collaborating with such a thing, that's a concern of the homeless union. These are troubling issues here, and grateful for the answers. He's going to answer more questions. We're going to submit to in writing, and hopefully he'll respond with some additional inquiries.
Don't you think a one-time placement of a sidewalk right here would be cheaper than putting hourly shuttle rides?
placed on the taxpayer in the city. Don't you think that it would be cheaper to put a sidewalk and let people have freedom than provide hourly shuttle rides?
Actually, the city made the decision with the previous camp and was very explicit about why. It wasn't about safety. It was about pleasing the anxious neighbors, where they also put in three levels of policing. One was a police station across the street, one was this guard here, and one was an internal guard.
If I remember correctly, Lauren, the vice director or whatever she's called here, told us last time that the reason that people weren't allowed to come and go was visibility, that they were not supposed to be visible here and that it's a low visibility, so they don't want to see homeless people coming and going. It's a special thing that they did when they got this placement due to the neighbors. They promised the neighbors and things like that that there would be no coming and going, low visibility, so that's why people aren't able to come and go. It has nothing to do with safety. All these things are lies to try to make it seem like it's for another reason. This is what I can't hardly take anymore, is all the lies that are going on around here.
Who told you that?
Which part? Lauren. Lauren Dixon. She's right in there.
I've spoken to neighbors who actually own property here. I just wanted to say, and the woman made a point of telling me, this was about a year ago or so, it was a while back, that they've had no problems, zero problems with homeless people in this neighborhood. I was shocked when I heard that because I keep getting from the city and the management at HSC that, oh, the homeless people throw trash, they do all these things. But in fact, this neighbor was telling me that the real secret was is that they have no problems here. Now, so there is a discrepancy between, you know, what seems to be happening in the real world or out here versus what this total promotional propaganda stuff that the city and its agents, its cohorts, like Captain Harrell, put out. The other thing I just want to say is I stayed in the shelter, and part of the reason I was investigating...
Which shelter?
It was the Polly Lee Loft. There were beds open all the time. Open beds all the time. I counted them. I watched this closely go on for months and months and months. They were keeping people out of the beds. The only time I really saw Phil Kramer get active was on Community Day when they wanted to beautify and clean up the surroundings and paint. Phil Kramer never visited the Paul E. Lee Loft. I don't know, I was in there at least 6 months, I think a lot, you know, several months more. What I'm trying to say is what this is about is trying to create a perception of homeless people as criminals, and they also do not want people to have their freedom or their rights. You know, I think you should have to do minimal to get in to get a bed. This whole thing of having to sign your identity away to HMIS in times when people don't trust the government, there's a lot of surveillance, you don't know who your information is getting shared with. It could be shared with the police when you don't want that to be shared with the police. So I just feel like there's a lot of problems with the way they've set up this whole thing.
Thank you, Elise.
You're welcome.
Robert.
Yeah.
She's concerned about the possibility of reprisals for coming out. I told her that she can contact either one of us if she gets reprisals for coming out.
Let me give you my card. Do you have a phone?
My daughter just went. I don't know her phone number. Right?
But you said you can get access to a phone.
Yes, I can.
This is the number you call. Have her call me at the Huff line.
Okay.
Yeah, you're better. As a matter of fact, I can give you my name, but you're better off calling Robert.
Okay, you want to go over and talk to the media along with the rest of the gang?
All right.
And so far, and it's Thursday, and that was on Monday, I haven't received any calls about any reprisals, so that seems to be good, and no reprisals seem to be happening.
You want to make some statements yourself? You're keeping your mouth shut on this?
You go, sir. But Robert's good about following up with that kind of stuff.
Any agreement? Are dogs allowed?
He's a service dog.
All right.
He's a lawyer, and consult with the lawyer before they sign the agreement. He said there is no such provision in the contract. I asked him to provide me a copy of this agreement.
Say that again.
The staff worker, this guy is just, was speaking to me before, is not deaf or disabled, but refuses to speak now. And then, so I spoke to one of my old neighbors, works here, and she...
First alarm security guard, Villa Ariel, I think. He's not being very cooperative or polite in giving us his name. What's your name, sir? And he stands there without answering. His initial is J, and it's V-I-L-L-A-P, or R-R-E-A-L, Villa Peral. What's your superior's name? And he refuses to give his superior's name. Is that correct? Okay, so we can always ask First Alarm to clarify that, and to clarify that we don't, I don't appreciate your being rude and unresponsive to a perfectly legitimate question. So, thank you. Last chance. Okay.
I was just asking this person because the rabbi had said that they negotiated with the police chief about entry into the Gulag camp so long as we didn't have protest signs, and I'm wondering when is that going to happen?
Oh, I don't even know that it was ever agreed to, but maybe it was.
Male or female families? That makes the shelter potentially
And what is being discussed here is the this is the First Alarm security guard Villarreal that we're referencing here, who's been standing in front of the gate, sort of his arms folded, apparently blocking anyone from coming and going, but. I don't know if he's actually blocking people from doing that, but he's acting like a sort of a mini cop who also doesn't have to say anything, but who will simply stand stone faced as sort of a guard to the area. Although it's not entirely clear who he's guarding from what, but he is a First Alarm security guard in First Alarm security uniform.
Available. You have conditions that in the shelter, we're not certain what the ingress and egress rules are. If they're anything comparable to what we have here, then we have a problem perhaps with people being compelled to give up their constitutional rights as a condition of going into the shelter. Martin versus Boise is very clear on this issue. The shelter has to be constitutionally sound. Cannot have a religious requirement. It cannot be such that I think the Ninth Circuit is broadly stating that these shelters cannot be run in such a manner as they constrain someone's constitutional rights. Clearly, if someone cannot walk out of this facility and go take a walk down the street and go visit a friend simply because they don't have a bike and there's not a bus here, seems to me that their freedom is being constrained, and that's a problem. Thanks, Bill.
Thank you. Let's listen to Drew Glover, who's keeping a quiet.
Trespassing citations has increased by 100%.
So they're not
allowing.
Well,
I was
the chief.
Yeah. Good to see you.
Drug lover.
Yeah.
How's it going? Sounds good.
So you were saying trespass citations have increased by 100%?
By about approximately 100%.
Where did you get those figures?
The police, we're in budget hearings right now. And so during the presentation from the police department, they provided the statistics of their citation, just a general overview.
This is Councilmember Drew Glover, and the issue here is, of course, for people who are not in these camps, which is most homeless people in this particular camp. This is the only camp the city is running other than a few nighttime shelters. But people who are not there face increased harassment or continued harassment for simply being homeless under stats that are not yet being provided clearly to the community by the police. Even though it's been requested by members of the council as far back as January.
Of it, nothing in detail. That data is coming back to us on the 28th because that was a request that we made on February 12th. But I took
it gets on the agenda.
But I took a picture of it to provide some context. So in 2017, the camping for the citations for camping were 298. In 2018, they were 66, but in 2017, the trespassing citations were 759, and in 2018, they were 1903.
Did they clarify on public or private property? Because that's the distinction that he makes, because he says, we'll give you trespassing citations if you're on private property.
He, being Chief Mills, will claim that people are getting ticketed naturally for trespassing on your private property, but not for public property, such as a park. But in fact, that does not seem to be the case with the statistics, which are being in a closed area, which is what in essence is being used as the main infraction ordinance against homeless people instead of the camping ban. That is to say, because they happen to be in a park at night or in areas the city has declared closed, like the city hall area, the police station area, the library area, the levee area, and so forth.
But we've done nothing, on, which isn't true.
We've actually put on
Should ask about that.
The reason we did that was that before we would go, we'd get permission from the person, go get their
Keith McHenry,
and you could see like the tickets like mounting and then contracting when something happened and then mounting again.
Yeah.
And so if we have all those rap sheets, that will be very helpful.
Yeah, we need to have a strategy when we explain this.
Yeah. Do you want to meet with Alicia and then and that's Julie, our intern, who's doing
that the woman love?
Yeah, she's helping.
And this, of course, is a sort of a conference after the press conference that kind of happened. People were dispersing, having come and raised issues, and now we'll see what the consequent reality is after we've heard the promises from the head of the Salvation Army. Let's take a musical break. The parody project, Dumb Down, a parody, of course, of Downtown. Yes, I'm going to go rolling right through the aftermath of the press conference, and I'll pick up some of the other things I mentioned at the beginning of the show, the Tuesday City Council meeting and how the audience shouted shame at the mayor, and the mayor shamefully then locked the chambers and locked people out. because she didn't want to give people an extra 15 minutes of let the last eight speakers speak at oral communication. And the Wednesday night Santa Cruz Neighbors colloquy with Justin Cummings, the vice mayor, and his responses to questions, which tend to show it's pretty much what it was before, only more so. He's not trying to hold the city accountable for their lack of shelter for homeless people. He is simply referring all questions to the city manager because he believes the city manager. he's not seeking any independent information, as far as I know. He's simply going with the program. Anyway, let's hear some more from the aftermath of the, as I say, rather historic encounter with the authorities, the shelter authorities, the poverty pimps, if you will, or the people who are running the shelter and getting paid for it big time in a model that, you know, it is a concentration camp. It is a place where people are concentrated, but it does provide more services and more freedom than in the past. And insofar as that's incremental improvement, it's incremental improvement. Real improvement in terms of doing what needs to be done, what should be done, and what could be done. And as such, it has to be properly characterized. But well, let's hear some more.
We'd get permission from the person, go get their rap sheet, and you could see, like, the tickets, like, mounting and then contracting when something happened and then mounting again.
Yeah.
And so if we have all those rap sheets, that will be very helpful.
Yeah, we need to have a strategy meeting with the plaintiffs.
Yeah. Do you want to meet with Alicia and then and Julie, our intern, who's doing
someone's quiet talking?
How is the city council meeting, Drew? Do you intend to move that the...
Just a second. Hey, Anthony, let me ask you the question.
Yeah, but you would say, where can we meet this quiet? I would suggest maybe going to the... I'd recommend we go to the Resource Center for Nonviolence.
Oh, let's do that.
The reason I mentioned that, just maybe going to the... I'd recommend we go to the Resource Center for Nonviolence.
Oh, let's do that.
The reason I mentioned that is because we were speaking at a staff meeting today, and one of the things we want to do is start doing more direct action trainings, but we wanted to coordinate with the homeless union to figure out what the goals are, what you want to do, and then get some direct action.
Again, the question I have for you is, tomorrow is the city council meeting. Right. Tomorrow there'll be an opportunity to require the city council's manager and mayor to put on the agenda the issue that you've just been raising about ticketing and what, you know, how many tickets, public, private property, trespassing, whatever, closed area.
Urination, solicitation,
exactly.
Dogs,
something you raised back in January, finally got the council to agree to do it three to 6 months down the road, or 3 months down the road, I think it was.
90 days, yeah.
And they have, however, been, you know, it was supposed to be on this current agenda. It was not. I asked you at a meeting recently if you would put it on, it required to be put on the agenda. You were reluctant to do that, or am I misremembering?
No, I will be making a statement on Tuesday during the calendar time to make sure that it is put on the following agenda, since it is past the 90-day timeline.
Also, will you ask similarly that the request that Food Not Bombs be given a special day also be put on the agenda, or if not, that it simply be voted by the city council since the mayor refuses to do that?
I'm going to submit an agenda report for the proclamation. Oh, no, she already refused to do it. During the calendar review, I'll also be making a motion to agendize that for the following city council meeting.
And he did not do that. However, one of the reasons he did not do that was because Chris Krohn made a motion which we thought would be something like that, saying, you know, since Mayor Watkins refuses to declare a special day recommending the 39th anniversary of Food Not Bombs because of all the services it's provided here and around the world to poor and homeless people, because she says Food Not Bombs is one of the litigants against the city's anti-homeless policies. Food Not Bombs should get an additional medal for doing that. But that's her excuse. And so those of us who are supporting Food Not Bombs said, okay, well, let's have four members of the council declare a proclamation. Mayor can do all the things she wants, but, you know, that's she has her side of the ideological spectrum that she supports, and we have our side, and it behooves us in the majority to press for that, or even if we're in the minority, to press for that, for that matter. However, he ended up, he thought that Crone was going to do something to that effect. Crone instead made a what I would call a half-assed, weak-kneed proposal that there be a discussion in the next council meeting, that it be put on the agenda that the issue of who makes the proclamations and how be discussed. Not the specific proclamation, which is about Food Not Bombs, delineating clearly what the lines of conflict and difference are, instead of pretending they don't exist or trying to talk around them or sort of, sashay into them in a discreet manner or look at the broader outlines or something like all this, which is really time-wasting when what you're really talking about is a profound and basic ideological difference. And when Crone could only get one... I think that was voted down, or didn't even get a second. I'm trying to remember which it was, and I'll be reviewing that on Sunday. Glover gave up and just declined to put the resolution for McHenry forward because, I believe I'm remembering this correctly, because he feared it wouldn't go anywhere. This sense of defeat, that you're only going to press something if you think you're going to win, is really the wrong way to go, and it's, I think, been a stumbling block and a strangling cord for all kinds of well-intentioned liberals on the city council, whether it's the earlier Crone who got on the council in 1998, or Micah Posner 6 years ago, thereabouts. You got to express yourself, put forward your point of view clearly, and if you get voted down, at least you're presenting a counter narrative that people can pick up. You're pick up on. You can actually present the truth of what's going on, and that's even more important than winning. If what you're winning is some half-assed compromise that you don't want anyway.
And finally, thank you for that. The $64,000 question, when are we going to stop hearing the shuffling around about you can't talk about this, you can't talk about that, because you're under some kind of investigation? When are we going to know the details of that? And is it a matter of when the city manager decides to say something or when you decide to say something? Obviously, it's when you do,
yeah.
But when will you be what are you waiting for?
It to be over.
And what's your expectation of when that's going to happen?
I was told 45 days.
From what day?
Days ago, so or longer. So
on the 46th day, will you be
I'm open in the next couple of weeks. How about that? That's all I know.
On the 46th day, are you prepared to say, I will wait no longer, these charges against me are thus, they're not accurate, or they are accurate, and leave it at that?
I think I'm just going to let it run its course.
You will not say anything?
I will continue to work on policies that help to support underserved community members.
But you have delayed action on these policies because of this so-called concern, which is real concern. I believe you when you say it's real. Don't you think the community has a right to know what's been shutting your mouth for the last 3 months or 45 days?
Maybe once it's all done. I would just appreciate your respect on this, Robert. I see where you're trying to go. I understand your pressure, but I'm just going to leave it at that.
You can leave it at that, but as a member of the public, I can't leave it at that because it's impacting your ability to act on these issues. You're also keeping an issue secret from the community that has to do with a member of the city council. It's not a member of the city staff.
I don't want to talk about this right now.
Well, you always can shut up and walk away.
I don't want to walk away because I'm here. You're in my space, so I just don't want to talk
to
about
Dr. Paul. Yeah. You can chat with him. No, I'm in your space for a specific reason.
Yeah.
Because I continue to pressure you on this because I think it's important.
I also think it's important, but again, I'll just ask for your respect and letting
me ask you about some other issues then, since we're... Actually, I think we kind of... and that's just an awful. Has there been, have you, you know about this campground and the controversies here.
Absolutely.
Have you had any conversations with either Eric, the immediate on-site director, or Captain
Harold? No,
Harold.
I asked for a tour of the facility. I originally asked for a tour of the facility before it was active. I was told that I couldn't get a tour of the facility until after it was active. So now it's active. I'll be putting in another request for a tour of the facility.
You know, given what Harold has said, you can walk up to the gate right now and say, if there's any member of the public here who wants to talk to a city council member, I'm available, which people inside might be jumping at the chance to do.
Yeah. I'll see you later, Phil. I'd love to get a chance to go and to take a tour and then talk to people while I'm in the camp.
Why take a tour? That sounds like a guided Potemkin village kind of thing. Why not just announce your presence here?
Please.
No please about it. You can do it right now if you want.
Just thank you. I thank you for giving me that information. I appreciate it.
Have you tried to sign up to be, you know, on a visitor list with anybody inside?
Not yet.
Okay. Or do you know anybody inside?
I don't know, because they're outside.
Not yet.
Well, you do it right now today.
I'm...
Just say no. It's okay. You have a right to say no.
Well, it's not that I am not going to do it today, but I have no idea what the flow is. I'm going to try and work to set up a coordinated tour so I can get the run through, and then I'll go in and talk to people afterwards to hear their perspectives one-on-one when I get a chance to meet them while I'm on the tour. I got my own plans. So
your own plans? How dare you?
No, let me operate on my timeline, and I will keep you in the loop.
We've been talking with
Drew Glover, council member for Santa Cruz.
Thank you, Drew.
Thank you, Robert. Hello. Not at all. What's going on?
Danny Press.
Jamie,
asking questions.
Jamie, it's nice to meet you.
Yeah, I think I met you once at the court hearing a couple Fridays ago.
Oh, great, yeah.
The ending one, yeah.
Hello again.
Yeah, I was wondering, so why are you here today? What are your main concerns?
I'm here to support the message that there needs to be more services, support, and access for people experiencing homelessness, but also just to observe, mainly. I mean, you notice I didn't do any talking today. I didn't talk to any of the press, except for you, because you came and spoke to me. I'm just here to observe, show my support, and also learn about what's going on, because they held this press conference so that they could educate people about the experiences people have had since the closure of the Ross Camp, the observations they've made, the benefits or the issues that have come from it, and so I wanted to get a chance to hear their perspective, hear the questions they were asking to Captain Harold, get a perspective from where they're coming from, and then also figure out what my next steps are personally on policy.
So what are your takeaways from this?
It's important to acknowledge
line, number four bus just passes by.
Areas where it could improve. I think there's an issue of showers here. I think there's an issue of access and getting people supplies here. I think there's an issue of coming to and from, the question of the sidewalk versus shuttle systems, the cost associated with that. So all of those things. But I think it's also important that a gentleman came out here and expressed his appreciation for the space. But interesting, though, the reasons for his appreciation was that he wasn't being harassed by police, he wasn't getting kicked around by police, he wasn't getting his stuff stolen. So the question then is does that justify the requirement to remove certain rights or privileges for someone just because they don't have a home or because they're of a certain class? Or should we be doing things in the city that make it so that people that aren't in a barbed wire fenced space can feel safe or have a full night's sleep without being harassed by police outside of the facility at the same time? So there's that concern, and, you know, sleep is a human right. So the fact that this gentleman said he's had difficulty sleeping because of the harassment from police throughout the throughout night times in general causes a bunch of concern, because a lack of sleep impacts mental ability, a lack of mental ability impacts the ability to function, lack to function makes you unproductive, and then you maintain in a cycle.
Right. Do you believe that some of these restraints that people have an issue with, like the barbed wire, the restraints on movement, that they are sort of necessary as a compromise to, you know, keep that safety?
I do not believe that barbed wire is necessary. The other place didn't have barbed wire, and other places and facilities don't have barbed wire, so what's the purpose of the barbed wire outside of the visual representation of keep out or stay in? The issue of transportation and access, you know, it's great that they can come and go as they please. The issue of having to wait for a shuttle is questionable, but if
the city were to install a sidewalk here to alleviate that. I think someone was mentioning that the cost to install a sidewalk versus the cost of, you know, the shuttle services to bring people in and out. Plus, if we're thinking about carbon emissions and wanting to make sure that we're using as little gasoline as possible, unless we, of course, have an electric shuttle. So there's all of these things that kind of come down and cascade.
Right. Is there any sort of policy that you've already sort of, I know it's early, but like, have you ever thought about any sort of policy that you might want to push for because of this?
Yeah, so this is somewhat resemblant. It is not the same at all, and there are many things that differ from this and what I've been suggesting, which are transitional encampments. So if people think that this model works, this is essentially a higher security model in some ways of a transitional encampment, but it has a lot of the same aspects. An entry gate that has security check-ins, people being able to come in and out, sleeping spaces. Now, the issue is the ability for them to share food, so I need to ask about the ability to share food in here, the participation of the residents, because this model is way more expensive than a transitional encampment. They're much less expensive because the people that reside in the camp are active volunteers and participants in the community. So it creates a sense of ownership, a sense of community, and people are ready to protect it, so they keep people from breaking the rules.